Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What's going down?
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of What's Going Down here on Patreon with no ads or ad-free on Tuesday on the main feed. My name's Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Mr. Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you doing today?
Penny, I'm doing all right, yes. Yes, doing okay. Doing okay. How are you holding up?
I'm good. I think Glasgow is going to have its work cut out for it on June 15th to even come close to the fans of Lyon, France, because it's got to be one of the best crowds of all time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said last week, I knew they were going to be hot because this was such an occasion, the double shot of SmackDown and then Backlash. But I mean, this had to top Backlash last year, I would say, and that was incredible, the response last year in Puerto Rico, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I said that on Twitter. I think for me, this is maybe the best crowd of all time. I mean, you could maybe there's an argument for other ones, but I think in terms of they were into everything on the show, the stuff that was, even the stuff like the women's tag title match, which on paper you would think is okay, they treated like it was, you know, a main event. So they deserve a lot of credit for how good they were, because you know we've seen these crowds before. The Raw after WrestleMania crowds where sometimes they're a great crowd, but they want to kind of like overtake the show or ambush it at points.
Yeah, we've seen that many times, and that when that happens, it's very annoying because it detracts from the show, doesn't it? Enhance it.
Yeah, exactly.
But this was the reverse. This enhanced the show. These crowds absolutely made SmackDown and Backlash better.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, if you're listening to this on the main feed, it's Tuesday. We will be talking about Raw on the PowerSlam podcast later this week. But we'll be spending most of the time today talking about Backlash. But let's talk about SmackDown a little bit before. What were the highlights for you from SmackDown? I mean, these SmackDowns to me tend to be kind of nothing shows generally in terms of storyline development, but they're almost like the starter to the main course of the following night, and the crowd just ate up.
That's it. That's that. There was nothing left. It got consumed. It went down a storm. They left a huge tip. That's what it did. I mean, in a strange way, and this, I wouldn't say this was the highlight of the night, but in some ways it was the most memorable thing on SmackDown, and that was the unfamiliar sensation of a crowd caring about the Authors of Pain. I mean, this may have happened in their first run in NXT. I think they actually were quite over in NXT during the first run. But ever since they've returned to WWE, I mean, it's just been crickets chirping, hasn't it? But here in Lyon, in France, wow. I mean, they're up against the New Catch Republic. And I mean, it actually was a decent match. I know the crowd response is misleading. Of course it is. We'll get to that, especially the Women's Tag Team Championship match on the Premium Live event. But, I mean, this wasn't bad. I mean, I know New Catch Republic are really good. Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, a tremendous team. But the Authors of Pain didn't really mess anything up. An AOP won after Karrion Kross nailed Bate from ringside. And, yeah, that was just wow. The Authors of Pain backstage must have just been flawed. It's like, wow, are we getting over? No, lads, you're not. It was the crowd. Everything was over, right? So you, by association, were as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you are right. The crowd were hot for everything, but it was one of those things where, you know, AOP, even the crowd couldn't fully commit to them. It's like they committed to everything else. But there's sort of, when you see the graphic of Karrion Kross in the Final Testament, you just kind of want to run away because you know nothing can come of it. But we were way more polite to them than I think that any other crowd in any part of the world would be. Like in Glasgow, I don't think AOP would have got any reaction because, you know, but also because the other thing we should mention about Lyon, France is that they have literally had nothing before. They've not had. I don't think France, we talked about this, I think, on the podcast a while ago, that France have never had a Raw or a SmackDown. It's only been Italy or the UK. And so, you know, they've been starved for it. And it almost felt as well they were kind of going, we're going to be such a good crowd that you're going to have to come back at some point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're going to be so vocal. We're going to, you know, give you such a warm welcome. The all future, you know, if you're going to write, we're going to run a show next year in Belgium. We're going to run a show in Finland. We're going to run a show in Spain. No, you're not. You're coming back here. We want you back. And it very much did feel like this was an audience that was so appreciative that WWE had brought its traveling roadshow to the country. And they obviously were.
The one thing I was going to bring up was there was the main event segment of the face-to-face with Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. And Cody actually tweeted out, the next day, I think he said, this is the first and only time in my career that I can ever remember being in the ring with somebody and not being able to hear myself or the other person because of the crowd. They were so loud, you know, and there was the whole thing about the 100 decibels thing on people's phones, getting told that the noise level was like unsafe for your ears. I mean, just a riot. I mean, it's just a great time. And you know, I think if you took for SmackDown anyway, I think if you were to look at the SmackDown that was presented in a normal scenario, we would probably not even be talking about it really. But
no, it was incredible. I mean, there's some other stuff on there that I thought that does merit a mention. I mean, I thought Carmelo Hayes and Bobby Lashley, there was a really good interaction backstage there. You know, Hayes was really cocky to Bobby Lashley. Lashley told him, Hayes, you know, if you need any advice, and Hayes is like, I don't need any advice. And Bobby Lashley stopped him and said, be careful who you disrespect. And Hayes was just so full of himself, it was untrue. I thought this could have been, in some ways, Lashley's best ever promo. It just felt so natural. Usually when Lashley's doing promos, it seems forced, and you know he's trying to remember what he's supposed to say. But it was almost like they just said to him, just say what you want to him. And it just flowed so well. I thought Paul Heyman, there was a nice little detail there, extension to the storyline. Paul Heyman admitted that he had pulled Roman Reigns from the draft, and Heyman said he had not spoken to Reigns since Mania. So we didn't know that until this episode of SmackDown, did we?
Yeah, no, so that was a good little kind of wrinkle to the story. And there was definitely, you know, and even like Kevin Owens speaking in French to the crowds was a nice touch. And there was... But what they were doing is obviously making sure that the big stuff was saved for Backlash, which is what they should do. That's how, you know, I think a lot of people are now kind of aware of what these weekends are going to be. You know, like if you're going to spend the big money, then, you know, the SmackDown's going to be a ton of fun. But just, you know, an amuse-bouche to the Saturday. So, but yeah, I'm looking at the Bobby
and also, we should also mention the RKO show with Orton and Kevin Owens, and Paul Heyman was the guest. And Orton asked Heyman, who exactly is the real tribal chief? And Heyman didn't really give an answer. He said, there's only one tribal chief. And at that point, Solo Sikoa and Tam and Tonga rocked up and attacked Orton and Owens. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was also another an extension to a storyline there. What else was on the show? And then, as you said, there was the AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes face to face in the show closing segment. Well, actually, the actual show closing segment, we were backstage where Randy Orton and Kevin Owens were fighting with the Bloodline.
Yeah, I do need to just kind of echo what you were saying about the, you know, Bobby Lashley, who I think has the best gig in wrestling, Finn. He just turns up in a nice suit and gets to be a talker. But I think that he could, if they really went in with it, there could be something really special with him and Carmelo Hayes, whether it's, you know, Hayes being down in his luck and having to join Lashley and then turning, or whether it's them just feuding with each other. Because, you know, Lashley's not really, you know, he was in that awful program with, but he's still, I mean, hopefully he's not anymore in that awful program with Karrion and Kross and his pals.
So, yeah, I think that ended at WrestleMania. I think that's officially over now.
Thank God. But yeah, hopefully it'll be full steam ahead for Lashley. So let's dive into the...
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Hayes and Lashley. Yeah, I think there's a lot they can do there. And I think Hayes is somebody, you know, that does need a little bit of help on the main roster. I don't think he's the finished article yet. And to be honest with you, Lashley and the Street Profits may need a little bit of help from Carmelo Hayes as well.
Yeah, I think so. But we shall see where it all ends up. Let's talk about Backlash, the PLE, Backlash France on Saturday night. We opened, so apparently there was word on the pre-show, the crowd were just going crazy. They were, you know, they were just like going crazy for everything. I think they even did, I didn't watch the full pre-show, but I think that there was a bit where, because Big E and CM Punk were in the States on a panel, and Big E met, I assume.
That's right. Didn't CM Punk get like, didn't he get trapped in WWE HQ? Wasn't that the story?
Yeah, he got trapped. I think until yesterday he was still there. But there's apparently a bit in the pre-show where Big E talked about Cody and AJ Styles, because I can't think of any other match where it would be relevant, but mentions the Bullet Club. And Punk says, you're not allowed to say that. And Big E says, times have changed. And yeah, that's just a really funny bit that, you know, Punk's obviously like, we can say that stuff now? Because, you know, that under Vince, that would never have been allowed.
No.
You would not be mentioning outside factions from other companies. So they even did a video featuring Andre the Giant on the pre-show because they're in France. So they were making sure the French crowd felt they were, you know, thought of with thinking of
being catered to.
Yeah, exactly. So we open up the main show with a bit, you know, a big sort of view of Leon and the city and how great it is. And the opening match is going to be the Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga match against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And fans just love Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And at the beginning, they end up just all fighting and having this massive brawl, and then SmackDown GM Nick Aldis comes out with a mic in his hand and basically, you know, at one point speaks in French and declares it a street fight. When he declared that match a street fight, you would have thought Austin and Hogan had agreed to wrestle. The reaction to this being a street fight was just, I've never heard anything like it.
Yeah, it was quite something. And I mean, but just going back to SmackDown, the fans were finishing the catchphrases, singing the entrance tunes, and just the Owens and Randy Orton, when they made their entrance, it just took forever. And they were just soaking up the response. They were soaking up the atmosphere. And it's like, wow, this is just incredible. These guys have been wrestling for 2 decades and have been everywhere and done pretty much everything. And even they were, I think, quite moved by the response from this audience. You know, it's just incredible, really. So yeah, we had this mega brawl that was really energetic, and like security out, and there was like Owen stunning the security guards, and like there was like the agents out, Shane Helms was there, and they were all there just breaking him up. And then she said, Nicole just came out and said, listen, if this is what you're going to do anyway, I'm making it a street fight. And it's like, yay! And you know, I think it was a good move. Actually, I've got to tell you, when he made, had this happened somewhere else, what he did might not have been such a good move, because he did so much in this street fight that a normal crowd might have been fairly burnt out by the opening match. But you could, I mean, if this show had gone 8 hours, this crowd wouldn't have been burnt out, would it?
It's funny you say that. I was thinking, when I think it was one point where Kevin Owens and Randy Orton were kind of getting the announce table ready for a move or something, and I was just going, how is anyone going to follow this? Like, because yeah, they're doing so much, and under normal rules, this would be like, you know, suicide for the show, because how are people going to follow it? But everything on the show,
yeah,
it didn't really matter. You could have put things in various orders. I mean, I think the order they did go with was great. I thought they did the perfect order of the matches, but they didn't give the crowd any they didn't give this crowd any downtime, and I think that was probably for the best, because if this event had happened and they'd had all the long video packages, I think that might have, you know, stalled the crowd a bit. But the fact that they just got match after match after match, they were into everything.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a sub-3-hour show, so it wasn't a mega-lengthy show. But I did, yeah, I shared your concerns as they're using the kendo sticks and rubbish bins at the end. They're going through all these tables, doing some pretty dangerous moves, actually, by WWE standards. And then we had the surprise run-in. We expected another member of the Bloodline to be revealed here, didn't we? We expect, a lot of people said it was going to be Jacob Fatu, right? A lot of people were predicting that.
Yeah, he basically he is in, is what people are saying. And everybody kind of expected him, but Tangaloa was not on people's radar to come in. So no, he was a complete surprise. And as soon as I sort of saw someone, I was like, oh, it's Jacob Fatu. But, you know, they've kind of kept us guessing. Apparently they've had this in the works for a while. So I think he's going to be a team with Tama Tonga long term, which I guess we'll see how it goes. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So it's all entering, you know, the impending. We're going to have to wait a while for that Bloodline Civil War, but we're going to get it later in the year and early next year. So they're just, you know, amassing the armies, aren't they, Kenny, for that civil war?
Yeah, we're kicking off. Because even like late, you know, later in the show, we actually saw Solo, Tama, and Tanga. It's a tongue twister for you. You know, seeing Jey Uso and sort of, you know, making it known that they're together. And where does Jey fit in with that? And, you know, the eventual Jimmy fit in with that. So, yeah, the plans are starting. If you're a fan of the Bloodline, yeah, There's a lot more of it to come, which is good.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this was mega, this match. I mean, just like, yeah, all sorts of double teaming and just fighting through the crowd and all the desks and with the tinfoil rubbish bins. We had to have some of those. And it was just all the props. And in the end, Skoa pinned Owens after a Uranagi and a Samoan spike, you and Aggie on the chair, wasn't it? And then the Samoan spike.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was. I mean, the Bloodline guys needed the win here. I mean, absolutely they did, to establish them as a force. And afterwards, you know, Owens and Orton, I mean, they were, I mean, it took ages to recover. They staggered backstage. So they really sold the beating that they absorbed here, the faces.
And, I, you know, special shout out to Kevin Owens and Tama Tonga, because that spot where the four chairs were out and Tonga was going for the superplex and Owens countered it at the fisherman's suplex onto the chairs, I mean, that was just an insane spot that they did.
Yeah.
You know, they were
on replay, didn't look that dangerous. When you first saw it, you're like, so this was a move that you would do on, you know, in ROH and indie matches, you know, dropping people on the chairs. That was something Owens used to do all the time. And I think it actually is a fairly safe spot to do. And there's no way WWE would have allowed it if there was a, you know, if it was a high probability of injury. So I think, you know, he knows what he's doing with that one. But, I mean, what a pop that one provoked. Proper huge high spot. And just before the finish as well, exactly where it should have been.
Yeah. So really hot opener. And, you know, following this was going to be the women's title match with Bayley defending against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Bayley had got a great reaction the night before on SmackDown. And these three went out there. And I've got to say, for me, this was just a sort of check, check, check. I thought Naomi had her best night since she's returned. I thought Bayley looked like a mega star. I think Tiffany Stratton looked incredible for how new she is to doing this. And, you know, Bayley gets the win by beating Naomi, because you don't really want to pin Stratton in the end, which is the right move. And, you know, the crowd were obviously a part of the success of it. But, I mean, I think these three had to be pretty happy when they went backstage at how this went.
Oh, yeah, well, you could see it on Naomi's face afterwards. She, like, hugged Bayley. You could just see she was ecstatic. It's like, idly. You know, I remember she had that match with Charlotte Flair before she left.
Yes, yes, yes.
She had a hell of a match on SmackDown. And I'm trying to think of a match that Naomi has had in WWE that would compare to this. Now, I think this was probably her best actual, you know, non-crazy gimmick match. Obviously, it's a triple threat. But, I mean, yeah, this was a hell of a performance. I mean, even Samantha Irving was over during the introductions, wasn't she? Even she was over. And it was like pin after pin and the saves. So, I mean, you know, finishers were being protected here. It wasn't like unnecessary kickouts. And, like, you know, that was awesome chance. I mean, at ringside, they ended up outside, Naomi that hit this amazing blockbuster neck breaker on Bayley off the barrier. That looked really good. Then she arrived at it, split-legged moonsault onto Stratton in the ring, and Bayley had to dive into the ring to interrupt the cover. So again, that was another finisher that was protected. So that was all really good. And just electric crowd throughout. Naomi and Bayley took out Tiffany with the 1D, which looked pretty good. And then Naomi and Bayley went back and forth, only very briefly, and Bayley pinned Naomi on a reversal. And yeah, Naomi was just so pleased afterwards with the quality of the match. And just at the start of the match as well, she was like, it reminded me when she returned at Royal Rumble. You could see she was really moved.
Yeah, for sure.
And the response. And this was even louder because... Sorry, Kenny.
You know, I was just...
Sorry, Kenny.
Have you ever seen anyone happier to have I've lost a match ever?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it was. But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, especially, you know, Naomi read the comments and she's had some rough showings, and this was pretty smooth throughout and so well paced and just built to this, you know, actually, I would say anticlimactic pin. I think it all made sense actually because he'd done so much to each other throughout the match. But it was, you know, just so well put together and so well received. And I'm sure she was, you know, just felt so relieved and just, you know, it's that, you know, affirmation, isn't it? You know, from the audience. That's what we're all seeking in life, Kenny, affirmation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she got it. And, you know, I think, you know, we're obviously happy for Naomi because we want her to shine the way that she did in Impact. And at least now we can see, even if it took this crowd to get it out, it's there. And that's going to hopefully give her a big boost going forward.
I couldn't agree more, Kenny.
So then we had the Jey Uso Damian Priest match for the World Heavyweight title. And I mean, before we talk about the match, Finn, talk about Jey Uso's entrance and the crowd with the lights. I mean, it almost kind of takes your breath away at how epic it came across.
Yeah, he really did. And he was just working with it. And again, he was just all this spontaneous stuff in the match, where he's just, you know, doing his thing and the crowd are mimicking him, and then he kept stopping the match. And you can see Damian Priest is like getting increasingly, you know, frustrated and irate with his challenger, but he's probably trying to suppress a smile because it's just going so well. And when you've got a crowd this easy, I mean, why not do stuff like that? You know, why not pad your match out? It's not the pay-per-view era anymore, so you know, obviously back then they would buy 3-hour blocks, so everything had to be timed, and you know, it was really strict in, you know, network Peacock era. You know, if they go a little bit longer, it doesn't matter, does it? The show isn't going to go off the air. We're not going to have a Diamond Dallas Page and Goldberg incident, so we're all right. But I mean, yeah, this was one of the, again, you know, both guys were just so over and just felt like main eventers, and the timing for Priest was so good because, you know, I don't think a lot of people really think he's going to hold the world title for a very long time, and I don't think he should, but he can look back on this, even if he loses the belt at Clash of the Castle, which we imagine he will, he can look back on this and say, wow, you know, what a night that was for me as world champion. You know, it wasn't like I came in and it was a muted response, or people didn't think I was worthy of this spot. This just felt huge, the match. And again, yeah, just taking the time and just, you know, savouring that atmosphere. And why wouldn't you, Kenny, if you're a performer?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I did want to ask you because, obviously, you know, I think that Jey Uso and Damian Priest here probably had the most, I don't want to say generic, but it's the word that's in my mind, the most generic match, I think, out of all the five, because it was just a very kind of, you know, WWE match. They do the big moves, they go back and forth, there's lots of kickouts. But my question was going to be to you, they had JD McDonagh and Finn Balor interfering in the match quite a lot, and Damian Priest kind of came across a bit like a, not like a Miz champion, but he came across, he wasn't a sort of strong champion. And I wondered, how do you feel about that presentation of him? Is that kind of what's necessary given all the other dynamics that we've talked about before, or should they have presented him a little bit stronger here? What do you make of the way that they positioned Priest as a champion in this match?
I think this is just him and his character, and this is who he is. And I think if they tried to present him as, you know, some Brock Lesnar type figure, I'm not even sure if we're allowed to say that anymore. Obviously, that name's banned from TV, as we discovered later on during the Styles versus Cody Rhodes match, actually. If they were to try and present Priest as something other than what he is, I just don't think he would be comfortable in that role. And I'm not sure if we would really recognise him. Because this is, you know, it's like watching that last James Bond film. You're like, well, he's that guy on the screen. That's not James Bond. And he kind of ruins it if the character or the wrestler pretends to be someone that he or she is not. So I think this is just Damian Priest's character. And I think we needed the interference to protect Jey on the finish. And also that furthers the storyline as well with Damian Priest and the Judgment Day, because he told JD and told Finn Balor, do not interfere in my match. Do not interfere, I need to do this by myself. So then they came out and did that without his permission. He was really angry with him afterwards. So I think all these moving parts mesh together well. And I think they know they've got something special with Jey. I don't really see Jey as a world champion. I think challenger is all he will ever be. But he's very effective in this role. And lots of wrestlers should never be world champion because they're just not cut out to be world champion. And that's just the way it is. They can be very effective as challengers. And, you know, that if that's their role, then, and they're very good at it, then they're successful in their careers. And, you know, this whole thing, well, if you're not aspiring to be world champion, I don't know why you're here. I think that was something Steve Austin said and people took it to heart. And it's like, well, yeah, that you were world champion, Steve, but not everyone can be. Doesn't mean that they can't be successful in their role on the card. So I think this match was pretty much perfect for what it was supposed to be. I don't think it needed to be anything more than it was. And I think we needed the outside interference to protect Jay. And as I said, to further the storyline between Priest and Balor and JD. So, but I'm with you. It was kind of generic. And Jay does a lot of repetitive stuff in his matches. I think that's sort of what's holding him back and what will always hold him back is that he does sort of the same things over and over, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, just kind of in response to the question I asked you as well, I think I do understand why with Damian Priest, I mean, you are kind of watching him going, this guy's not cut out to be a long-term world champion. But like you say, not everybody's cut out to have that happen. And I think that, you know, the fact that in the match there was a lot of story stuff with the Judgment Day and them interfering was good. Because I think if he had come in here and kind of steamrolled over Jay, say that's the way they presented him, the problem is Jay's so over and there's more you can do with him and he's obviously going to be going back in the bloodline stuff that you kind of have to protect Jay in this scenario. So I think they were able to kind of kill two birds with one stone by giving Priest something to further the story and also giving Jay an out. So I think that overall it was good, but I do think it was probably the most generic match on the show.
It was a mid-card match, but also every match, you know, that's the thing, we was kind of misleading with that opening match because they gave us so much. And as we've already said, had that been on a normal show, it could have been very problematic because it might have taken the audience two matches to recover from, you know, the drama and the intensity and action that was presented in match number one. But because this, you know, audience was on, like, you know, powered by Duracell or whatever, you know, they just kept going. They got away with it. But yeah, Jay versus Damian Priest, it was supposed to be like a mid-card match, even though the world title was on the line. This is exactly what it was supposed to be. It was a mid-level, mid-card match. You couldn't really conceivably have put this on last, could you?
No, not at all.
It might have worked with this crowd because everything worked with this crowd. But imagine if Jay versus Damian Priest had gone on last. Wouldn't it really felt like a proper main event? I don't think it would have.
I think the placement of the card, I said it earlier, I think the placement of the card was excellent. Up next on the show, we had, and we should mention there was a chant throughout the night. My French is horrific, so I can't, but it was like Super Mom de or something. And basically, the gist of it is that the French broadcast team apparently have a thing that they do all the time where they basically kind of go, one, two, only two, and they say only two all the time. And that's like something that the French love. So they were doing this at any point during the show where there was a two count and they were just going mad for it. So it's kind of interesting, right? Because these commentators are kind of the voice of the last 10, 15 years or whatever for French fans. So it was kind of fun to see them doing their chants that, you know, we were kind of just not really aware of unless we got on Twitter and figured out when somebody could translate it for us. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, so the next match we had was the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Story of the match was Bianca Belair doing a lot of selling before Jade came in. But the match did go 17 minutes, and there was some really good stuff in there amongst the I don't know, they got lost. I think that's the best way to put it. They basically became that television show for a couple of minutes when there was a tag situation where nobody knew who was legal, nobody knew what was going on. But obviously, this is the longest match Jade's ever had. I think the longest match she was involved with in AEW was 11 minutes. I think that was the longest she's ever gone before. So how do you think the match went for Jade specifically and as a whole?
I mean, there was a lot of problems here. I'm not sure who was to blame. I think probably not Bianca. I thought Bianca in some ways had her best match ever because whenever she was in there, it was fine. And at the end, when she came in, you're like, wow, Bianca. Anyone who thinks that Bianca Belair cannot go, just watch that final sequence when she comes back in. And she just, everything just clicked again. The match was just back on course in the direction it was supposed to be going. And it was like she had this confidence and this self-assurance. and everything was fine in the world again. But yeah, I mean, Jade and Bianca had matching outfits. They looked amazing. The audience reacted to them like they were, you know, Marvel superheroes, which is, you know, the characters are supposed to be playing here. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what was going on with the referee, because we had a period there where Kyrie was in and she wasn't legal, but she was in for a long time. It's like, why didn't the referee say, listen, you need to just get out and get Asuka in? And it's like Jade was really confused. You could see she didn't know what was going on. And, you know, it's up to Kyrie and Asuka as the veterans to tell her what to do and not screw things up. So between the ref and Kyrie and Asuka, they should have been able to work out that this went off course and get it back on course immediately. And it was, there was two fairly long periods where this was a total mess, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, because there was that moment where, you know, there's like, I think it was Bianca, I can't remember if it was Bianca or Jade, I think it was Jade, tried to make a pinfall on Kyrie, but then the referee was saying, you're not legal.
But then
Kyrie then continued the match as the legal person. It didn't really make any sense.
No, it didn't make any sense at all. And like the ref should have got in there, because like Jade would have been thinking, right, hold on, these are the veterans. I'm listening to them. Everybody knows that I'm still pretty green at this. And, you know, she was like there at times, looked like she didn't know what the hell was going on. But I mean, you know, I would say probably 75% of it was actually pretty good. And I thought Bianca had a great night. And it was a shame for Jade, really, because she came in with that springboard cross body block onto both Kyrie and Asuka in perfect position. And that was a big pressure move for her, because we've never seen her do anything like that before. At least I never had. And I feel like I've seen all of her TV matches. And that was a hell of a move she did. And what a start to her contributions to the match. And, you know, in the end, you know, when she did that sequence there with Kyrie, and that was really well put together. And fans were just like, wow, look at this. And you could see the announcers were just so relieved that it had like a really strong finish. And some parts of it looked a bit off. But when they showed him again on replay, they actually looked okay. It's like a double team move that Jade and Bianca did on Kyrie, and it actually looked all right on replay. First time it looked a bit ropey. But yeah, in the end, yeah, Belair pinned Asuka. All I can say, Kenny, is if this match had taken place in Philadelphia or Chicago or New York City or indeed pretty much anywhere else, it would have been death. I mean, people would have just, it would have been, people would have been booing him out of the building. And I think people would have viewed it as the worst match of the year. And as it was, because this crowd is so supportive, you know, they did get away with it in the end. But yeah, they were very fortunate. And I really hope there's going to be, if it hasn't happened already, there's going to be a post-mortem here. Get all these people in the room and work out what went wrong.
I think, you
know, and try and learn from this.
Yeah, for me, I thought that she, I think the positives are that she has come on, and she is getting there slowly but surely. But to me, the big thing was whenever you watched her, when she sells, you can see her trying to do it, and you can see her thinking about it in a way that other wrestlers don't really. And I think that the only way to kind of get out of that is to, and I heard this, I can't remember where I heard this bandied around a couple of days ago, but Put her on the road and have her doing 10, 15-minute matches every night with Bianca against the Kabuki Warriors, and have Jade do a lot of selling and have her get it down more and more and more, because ultimately she can have all the power moves in the world, but until she gets enough experience, learn to do that sell. Because in big WWE matches, that's the key, is the sell. So
sure.
I think she's got it in her. I don't think it's something that's like going to not be possible. I just think you need to, now that she's on TV and she's a tag champ, do it on house shows. People will lap it up. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, you can see, I mean, it should just come naturally. And you can see, like, they did, like, you know, arm lock, and then she didn't sell the arm at all. And there was a lot of things where, I mean, there's a lot to remember. And this was quite a complicated match. So it was, you know, it's a lot of pressure. And, you know, it's very difficult pro wrestling, remembering everything. And yeah, she needs to get out there on the road. I agree. And she needs to be, you know, selling and just doing a lot more. And who cares if she's, I mean, I know she's supposed to be like a superhero, but if you're a face, particularly, we know the emotional heart of any match is the sell, you know, and that's what leads to the big comeback and everything else. So she needs to learn how to do that instinctively. And you can see that she's having to think about everything far too deeply, like just the basics. And then that's probably distracting her from what she's, you know, trying to remember is the next spot or sequence in the match. So, yeah, she needs to get out there on the road. You're right, where there's less pressure and she can just learn how to do it and do it naturally without thinking about it.
Which leads us to the main event of the show, Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. They were talking on commentary about how AJ had basically got gear made to have a nod to the gear he wore when he faced Dusty Rhodes, you know, 20 years ago in NWA or whatever. So that was a nice nod to the past. But they went like 27 minutes here. It was a long match. Cody's first big first title defense. How did they do? I mean, I know how the crowd at one point just started singing the French national anthem, but how did the guys in the ring get on?
I mean, at the beginning, what really amused me here was that fans sort of finished Cody's song and then applauded themselves. Now that was funny. That's really, and like the bouncing up and down like a jazzed up footy crowd at times. I mean, it worked because of, you know, there's people saying, wasn't there, that Cody had suffered a shoulder injury in the match with Carmelo Hayes on SmackDown, right? That's what they were saying, weren't they?
Yeah.
I don't think he did, but they worked that into this match, and Styles worked over Rhodes' left shoulder. I mean, you know, we said that this was the right opponent for Cody in his first, you know, televised title defense or first premium live event title defense. And, you know, they had all the props and everything. I mean, Cody powerbomb Styles through the French desk, after which they only just, both of them just beat the three count. Rhodes kicked out of the 450. I mean, they did all the big moves and all the big kickouts. One thing I didn't like about this match was Styles using the burning hammer, Kenta Kobashi's old finisher, and Rhodes kicked out on one. It was like that eight thing they do in AEW matches, or they do in some Japanese matches. It's like, no, don't let that infiltrate WWE, you know, where the guy takes this mega move and then just kicks out and fires up. And I just think it always looks really fake. And you know me, Kenny, I don't like using the F word in connection with pro wrestling, but I am not a fan of that at all. It just really annoys me. So Cody did that, and that was the low point of the match for me. At one point, Cody applied the Kimura. Graves reminded us that Rhodes knew how brutal that hold was. And I mentioned this earlier, there was no mention here of Brock Lesnar.
No.
So that was only last year, wasn't it, their feud?
Yeah. So
his name was not brought up. His name is obviously banned. You can mention Bullet Club, but you can't mention Brock Lesnar, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we were wondering, was he, you know, because Triple H even said in one of the press conferences, Brock might be back soon, but there was no mention. He was persona non grata, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, in the end, Rhodes hit a top rope Cody cutter and then a crossroads for the 1-2-3. So it was a decisive outcome. No outside interference, which, you know, was, you know, characteristic, you know, Roman Reigns' title defenses were characterized by outside interference. I mean, they were just part and parcel of every Reigns defense. So that was refreshing that it was actually a clean finish without any run-ins. I mean, I think we'd had enough of them earlier on the show. So yeah, I mean, it was a long match. I think if this had taken place somewhere else and the crowd hadn't been so enthusiastic, then maybe it would have dragged a little bit. But I mean, this was such a firecracker of an audience that they just powered this, I think, to a successful finish. Kenny, what did you think of it?
I mean, sometimes I think it's hard when you're watching a match with this kind of crowd to to decipher. You have to really concentrate to decipher if the in-ring action is good, because you can kind of just be swept away with the crowd because they're so, you know, amazing, or as you would say, amazeballs that comes out now and then. But I thought they worked a really good match. I thought it was really strong. I thought AJ Styles, this is the best match he's had in years in WWE. I mean, he's just not, to me, this felt like the AJ Styles of 2016, 2017 more than it did the AJ Styles of the last couple of years. So I thought he brought his A game. Cody made him look like he was a threat to the title, which, you know, going in, you didn't really feel like he was. And yeah, I thought overall that they did really well, and the crowd were so willing it to be good. And luckily it was two guys in there who, I also felt they were able to have a match that was a bit less, I know you didn't like the one kick out thing, but in saying that, they had a bit more freedom than I think they would have had under Vince to do some different stuff and to try and not have a kind of paint by numbers match. So, you know, we're going to get stuff in that maybe we like or we don't like, but I'm glad that, you know, we're able to see two guys like that kind of have a bit more of a match than they would have had on an indie show, a big indie show, rather than just have to do the WWE formula step by step. So I was a fan of it, and I think it's a good start for the Cody title reign. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I was happy.
I mean, I thought it was well done. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I thought Styles, he had a really good night against Seth Rollins last year at the Night of Champions event.
Yes, he did.
When crowned Rollins champ. But I think this was probably his best match since then, at least. And maybe his best match in a number of years. But you could see Styles realised that he'd been entrusted with, you know, a really important task here, putting Cody over in Cody's, you know, first premium live event title defence. So, you know, Styles has been around him for a long time. He knows what he's doing. But he was taking this very seriously. He certainly wasn't phoning anything in or, you know, not giving his all. I mean, he absolutely took this very seriously. And, I think he absolutely earned his pay at Backlash on Saturday night. And I'm sure Cody was very appreciative afterwards. I'm sure Cody, you know, realised what Styles did for him here. And it was, I think it was a good night for everyone. Let's be honest, this match. And the audience was just so vocal, so supportive, so enthusiastic, so exuberant. I mean, yes, this is a crowd. You wish this crowd was there at every premium live event.
Yeah. And it makes me feel good about, like, you know, the Berlin show, the Glasgow show. I think these are going to be special events. So,
I mean, definitely, and the audiences there will have been watching this and like, right, okay, you know, they have set the bar. That's the measuring stick for audiences. This is what's expected of us. So I think that will encourage people to be more boisterous at these shows because of, you know, how thrilled WWE was with this event and the potential of them going back to France or Lyon, France. Then potentially, you know, if Glasgow's got an electric crowd as well, it's like, wow, you know, maybe they're going to come back here, and same with Berlin. So I think it's going to encourage fans to be more vocal. And that's a good thing because, as I said earlier, it enhances the show.
Indeed, indeed. Well, listen, if you are listening to this and you are under a rock for some reason, haven't watched Backlash France, watch it. It's a great 2 hours and 50 minutes, whatever it was, that I think you will all enjoy. So we're going to be back on Thursday on Patreon, Finn, where we're going to be talking about the Raw, which has 8 matches announced for the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments, including...
Yeah, some big matches as well. Some big matches on Raw this week. Wow.
Yeah, we've got Gunther and Sheamus. We've got Drew and Finn Balor. We've got Ilya and Ricochet. Io Sky and Natalia. There's a lot of matches here. So hopefully some of them get some time and we'll have some memorable stuff to talk about on Thursday.
I'm sure we will, Kenny. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm really looking forward to, you know, Gunther, you know, versus Sheamus again. We haven't seen that for... We obviously saw it at Clash of the Castle and we saw it once on TV as well, didn't we?
Yes, yeah, we did. But, you know, hopefully this will continue to... I mean, they're not going to have a bad match. There's no way. There's just, no. I can't even enter it into my mind that that would happen. So, but yeah, listen, we'll be back on Thursday. We want to thank you for all your support. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes where you can get more stuff from us. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com is where you can get the mag. PowerSlamMagazine.com is where you can pre-order the 1995 yearbook. They are arriving at my house imminently, so say goodbye to space.
Oh dear. Well, that's good. Yes. It's good for all the people who bought them, but you know, hell, that's going to be a bit of work for you, Kenny. Sorry about that.
It's worth it. It's worth it to get the books out there. So, you know, if you've not known that the 95 Volume 1 yearbook is going to be available, it's arriving with us soon. I'm not going to say when. So, you know, you will be getting very soon. So PowerSlamMagazine.com is where you can pre-order. So thank you for all your support, everybody. We really appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.